This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Late last week, the New York Times reported that the Central Intelligence Agency destroyed hundreds of hours of videotape that recorded the interrogations of two suspected al-Qaeda operatives. Several sets of questions follow. Congressional Intelligence Committee want to know why they were destroyed and who outside the CIA knew in advance that they would be destroyed. Congressional Judiciary Committees want to know if this might be an obstruction of justice. And lawyers for terror suspects want to know if these questionable interrogations are the source of damaging information about their clients. The CIA's internal watchdog and the Justice Department have initiated investigations, and congressional hearings begin tomorrow when CIA Director Michael Hayden appears before the Senate Intelligence Committee. In a moment, Mark Mazzetti, one of the Times reporters who broke this story, joins us. If you want to talk to him about what we know and about what we don't, our number is 800-989-8255. The email address, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the hour, William Frawley joins us on the opinion page. He's a former university president who lost his job and maybe his career after two arrests for driving under the influence. But first, the destroyed CIA tapes. Mike Mazzetti, national security correspondent for the New York Times, is with us here in Studio 3A. And thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And to begin with, when were these tapes recorded and what do they show?
The tapes were recorded in 2002, and as you said earlier, they were hundreds of hours of tapes of the interrogations of two detainees, Zubaida and Nashiri, who were two of the three detainees that the CIA had at the time. The third was Ramzi bin al-Shib. It's unclear at this point exactly what the tapes did show. We do know that they were of some of the severe interrogation methods the CIA was using at the time. It's likely, although not definite, that they included waterboarding, which is a very controversial technique that the CIA used at the time. They were, as I said, recorded in 2002, and from about 2003 to 2005 was this period of time where there were intense deliberations within the government about what to do with the tapes.
Mm-hmm. And I gather there's no debate about who ordered them to be destroyed.
There doesn't seem to be a debate about who gave the final go-ahead. The head of the agency's clandestine service at the time in late November was Jose Rodriguez. The clandestine service is formerly known as the Department of Operations. Now, even though he appears to have given the order, it is unclear exactly who else was consulted and whether he had the authority to do it. There are some officials who say he got some kind of authority, legal justification to do the destruction. And so that's what we're trying to sort out at the time.
Mm-hmm. And there's also a question about, who knew, in fact, that the tapes did exist at one time? We've heard from the White House that President Bush knew neither that they existed at all, nor did he know about the fact that they were destroyed. But other than that, there's certainly been several members of Congress who knew that they existed.
That's right. And not only members of Congress, but White House officials. Again, we're trying to still reconstruct this whole chain of events, but it does seem pretty clear now that back in 2003, when the CIA realized that it wanted to get rid of these tapes, the top lawyer at the time of the CIA, Scott Mueller, went not only to congressional oversight committees, but also to the White House to get their advice. We believe that he talked to Harriet Myers, who was at the time was a former deputy chief of staff. She eventually became a White House counsel.
And has since left the White House.
That's correct. And it's unclear exactly what she said. We think that she advised against the destruction of the tapes. But then there's this whole period of time of over 2 years where we do think there were further discussions among the Justice Department, the White House, and the CIA. So it was not only contained within the CIA.
And so it was a larger discussion. And at that point, why do you think the tapes were destroyed?
I think there was probably several reasons. One of the primary reasons that the agency has cited is that the tapes showed the faces of covert operatives interrogating al-Qaeda detainees. And if that were to leak out, these agents would be in danger. It was also a time—
In danger of what?
In danger of possible retribution by al-Qaeda. That's what the statement by CIA Director Mike Hayden said on Thursday, mm-hmm. that it was primarily a safety concern. At the same time, when they were destroyed in 2005 was amidst intense congressional and legal scrutiny about the CIA program. The whole issue of waterboarding and intense techniques was really gathering a lot of steam on Capitol Hill. Senator McCain was talking about some of these intense interrogation methods. So, I mean, there is a real question about why, if they wanted to destroy them in 2003, they ultimately pushed the button on doing it in 2005. So that, there are still questions about that.
And these intense techniques, including waterboardings, a lot of people would describe as torture.
Some have described it as torture, yes.
And the other thing is that as we go through this, there are a lot of people who would have been interested in the information on these tapes. For one, the 9/11 Commission. They were never provided copies?
That's correct. The 9/11 Commission lawyers and staffers that we spoke to said, first of all, that they never got the tapes. They said that they put out a blanket request for all documentation to the Central Intelligence Agency about not only the interrogations of high-value detainees, but any kind of recordings and transcripts. They originally wanted to speak to the detainees themselves, but they were denied permission. So the CIA is saying that the 9/11 Commission never specifically asked for tapes.
There is also a number of attorneys for various represent clients at Guantanamo Bay, and they would want to see these tapes to find out if the information on those tapes was damaged, was a source of information that resulted in allegations against their clients.
That's correct. The two detainees in question here, Zubaydah and Nashiri, are currently at Guantanamo Bay. The government has long said that they want to ultimately bring these people to justice, to have trials of some sort for these detainees. So that could complicate the legal procedures for at least those detainees and possibly more.
There's also the question of public relations. If these tapes got out, some people believe this could be another Abu Ghraib.
That's right. And the CIA says that everything on the tapes is lawful, but no one would dispute the fact that it's pretty tough. They were pretty tough to watch. Very severe methods being used. And if this were to get out, it would probably be an order of magnitude greater than Abu Ghraib.
Tell us more about Jose Rodriguez, the head of the Directorate of Operations, the guy who pushed the button.
He's a longtime CIA undercover officer. In fact, his cover was only lifted a few months ago this summer. He's in the process of retiring from the CIA. He rose to, as I said, the highest level that he rose to was the head of the clandestine service. He served the CIA about three decades, mostly in Latin America. He rose to become the head of the Latin America division. And then after 9/11, he was put into the Counterterrorism Center to become chief of staff and eventually the head of the Counterterrorism Center. It was surprised, his selection to the Counterterrorism Center surprised some, because after 9/11, when the CTC was focused almost singularly on al-Qaeda in the Middle East, they put someone in charge who had no Middle Eastern background, didn't speak Arabic. But some people thought he did a very fine job there. Some people didn't. So as with anything with the CIA, you'll get a difference of opinion.
And particularly about his motivations, what do we know other than the statement that was issued last week?
It's unclear. The current informant officials that I've spoken to said that he was very concerned about these leaking out and doing damage, not only an embarrassment to the agency, but also to, again, the security risk to CIA operatives. Beyond that, it would be real speculation, and we have to sort of learn more.
If you want to know more about what we know and what we don't about the destroyed CIA tapes, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Our guest is Mark Mazzetti, the national security correspondent for The New York Times, one of the reporters who broke this story. And let's begin with Mark. And Mark's calling us from San Antonio in Texas.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Afternoon.
I'm a former deputy director with the Defense Intelligence Agency. I've been retired for about 10 years. But I think they're making an issue out of these circumstances that is way above what it should be. Members on both sides of the aisle were aware that those tapes existed. A number of them saw the tapes and agreed with the methods that were being utilized. And I think it's dramatically important that those type of methods and tactics be utilized, because in an event that I'm very familiar with, when tactics were utilized like that on people who were being interrogated, we were able to develop information that interdicted a suicide bombing on a U.S. embassy that saved the lives of hundreds of people. And it, I find it difficult to understand why the people in the United States don't understand that we are at war and these methods are being utilized to save U.S. lives.
A lot of people don't understand why the United States is employing techniques that they regard as torture.
Well, you know, the incidents at Abu Ghraib are a good example. Yes, they were denigrated, they were embarrassed, but we didn't cut off anybody's head on live television. That's torture. If it takes torture to save lives, I know the majority of people think that that is not right, but I tend to think that if the terrorist situation gets to the point where someone detonates a suitcase nuke in the United States, there's going to be an entirely different change of opinion with regard to what tactics we use to obtain information to prevent from things like that from happening.
That may be, but we're not in that situation now.
Well, how do you know that? With all due respect to your guest, the information that the most journalists get is certainly isn't given to them by the agencies that are conducting secret and clandestine work for the United States. And the attorneys who are representing people at who are now incarcerated as combatants, they're not cleared to see information from those tapes. Most of what was said during those interrogations is classified. So I don't know how you make it easy for everybody and still get the job done.
Well, you raise a number of good points, Mark. We wanted to thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. We'll be back with more in a moment. Our guest is Mark Mazzetti, national security correspondent of The New York Times, one of the reporters who broke the story late last week of the destruction of CIA tapes of interrogations of two alleged al-Qaeda operatives. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. News that the Central Intelligence Agency destroyed hundreds of hours of videotaped interrogations broke last week. The story, though, has been unfolding for years, though largely out of public view. We put together a timeline of events at npr.org. With us here in Studio 3A is Mark Mazzetti, national security correspondent of The New York Times, one of the reporters who broke this story last week. If you'd like to talk to him about what we know and what we don't, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. You can also share your comments on our blog. That's at npr.org/blog of the nation. And Mark Mazzetti, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to some of the questions or comments, I guess, that were posed by our first caller, Mark, from San Antonio.
I wanted to actually just make a point of clarification for what the caller said. The best information we have, in contrast to what he said, is that Congress was never actually shown the tapes. The Intelligence Committee were never allowed to see the tapes themselves. Our best reconstruction of events is that in early 2003, that the oversight committees were told about the existence of the tapes of the two al-Qaeda suspects, and that several Republicans and Democrats advised the CIA against destroying the tapes. Porter Goss, who was the top Republican on the House Intelligence Committee, and Jane Harman, who was the top Democrat, both said don't destroy the tapes. So I just wanted to clarify that one point.
And the number of people in Congress who are aware of this is very small, and they are told this information under very restrictive circumstances.
That's right. The group is often called the Gang of Four, which is a group of it's actually the two top members of the House Intelligence Committee and the two top members of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And they, when they're briefed, sometimes they're brought to the White House or brought to the CIA. Sometimes they go to secret rooms on Capitol Hill, and usually their staff is not even allowed to be present in the meeting. So, yes, the briefings take place in an ultra-classified setting.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Al. Al with us from San Jose in California.
Hi, Mark. Thank you very much for this story. It's extremely interesting to watch it unfold. I was reading some stuff on this recently online, so I'm not sure what the sources are, and maybe you can clarify it. But it seems to me that there's speculation that some of the information gleaned from the interrogations was actually itself damaging, and that some of the people named met with premature deaths afterwards. Sounded a little conspiratorial, but I'm wondering if you can talk for a minute about some of the other motivations for covering up the things that were obtained during that interrogation and actions that were taken on them.
I don't have any information about that. All we know is that the interrogation tapes were transcribed. The information existed at the CIA for quite some time, and that the actual transcripts were, we believed, given to the 9/11 Commission. But beyond that, we don't know what became of the information.
So you don't know how useful it was, what it led to, what might have happened to it?
Certainly the interrogation of Abu Zubaydah has been cited as President Bush as giving up key information that ultimately led to the capture of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the believed mastermind of the September 11th attacks in early 2003. So to clarify, government officials have said that these interrogations did provide useful information that led to further captures of al-Qaeda suspects.
Thanks for the call, Al.
Thanks.
As we mentioned, a lot of that information would have been of great interest to the 9/11 Commission. Joining us now is Thomas Kane. He was co-chairman of the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks on the United States, also known as the 9/11 Commission, also the former governor of New Jersey. He joins us by phone from his home state. Governor Kane, good of you to be with us today.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
And the 9/11 Commission asked for all material connected to the interrogations of al-Qaeda operatives. Did it include transcripts of these tapes, reference to these tapes? Did you know they existed?
We didn't know they existed. We asked for everything, including, our staff tells me, including specifically asking for any tapes. We certainly asked for all materials having anything to do with the detainees, because the detainees were our most important source of information, because everybody who took part in the plot was dead. So the detainees were vital to writing our report. And so we did ask for everything having to do with the detainees, and we're told we had everything by the CIA officials.
And did the information you received refer to the interrogation, of, particularly of Mr. Al-Zubaydah?
Not in detail, no. Obviously, we were allowed ourselves to ask all the detainees questions. And those questions, our staff could not see them face-to-face, which we wanted to. But we were told that would interfere with the method of interrogation. So we were allowed to submit questions to the people who were asking the questions of the al-Qaeda operatives. Then we'd get back the answer, then we could submit follow-up questions if we wanted to. So we got a lot of information from detainees that way. But certainly we would have liked to see this and would have liked to have this information.
I was going to ask, what do you think may have been lost by the fact that you didn't get you and your staff did not get to see them and now never will?
Yeah, well, that's the problem. We don't know. I mean, I hope nothing. I mean, I hope we had all the materials we needed, but we don't know that now. When we find out there was materials there, which we were assured didn't exist, and now we find out they did, and they weren't given to us, and now they're destroyed. So, you know, maybe there's information lacking. I hope not, but certainly could be.
And it, I guess, has to raise questions about what else might be out there.
Yeah, it does. I mean, we actually praised a number of the federal agencies for their cooperation because they were cooperative. I mean, we got everything we asked for, including the most highly classified materials in the possession of the United States government. And when we finally said, have we got everything, they said yes. And obviously, they didn't tell the truth.
Your interest in this would have been the information provided rather than the methods used to gather it.
That was our task. We were not asked how the information was gotten. We were asked to get every bit of information we could so we could tell the American people the full story of the plot and make recommendations to make people safer.
Yet, if you'd seen that the information was extracted from somebody after waterboarding, that's just speculation at this point, but would that have raised questions in your mind about the quality of that information?
Well, it certainly would have, and I think I can speak for most of my fellow commission members and say, look, we are against torture. We just don't believe Americans ought to be doing that. That's not the way it's not who we are. It's not how we get information from folks or ever have, even in the midst of wars. And so I think it would have been very offensive to us if we had any materials that did evidence torture in any way. And of course, we don't know if this did or not.
And given that, your final report, your committee's final report, of course, was a bestseller in this country. Many, many people wanted to know what happened. I guess has to be considered at this point a work in progress.
Yeah, well, you know, we always said, you know, we didn't think it was going to come out this way. But we always said in the commission, look, we are telling you everything that we know now that we have any possibility of obtaining from even the most secret sources in the United States government. But it doesn't mean that new evidence won't come to light sometime in the future, which will amend or change or add to the information we have. But we never thought it would come from a federal agency that was mandated to give us everything they had.
Governor Kaine, thanks very much for being with us.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Tom Kaine, the co-chairman of the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks on the United States, also known as the 9/11 Commission. He joined us by phone from New Jersey. And just to follow up on that, Mark Mazzetti, not just Governor Kaine and the 9/11 Commission, but a lot of people wanted that information.
That's right. We'll see what happens in the courts over the next few months. The lawyers for several of the Guantanamo detainees and also lawyers involved in other legal proceedings are starting to come out and say that the destruction of this information could affect the defense of their client. And so we'll see what happens. There's been a number of lawsuits filed with regard to detainees. So there was also a question of whether enough information was handed over in the case of Zacharias Moussaoui, who was convicted last year of being the so-called 20th hijacker in the 9/11 plot.
There was also at least one court order requiring the government to turn over all materials involving one case, and that came at least 6 months before the destruction of these tapes.
That's right. The agency is saying that the court order in the Moussaoui case did not cover the interrogation of those specific detainees whose tapes were destroyed. They say it covered different ones. So that's currently a matter of dispute.
Let's get Edward on the line. Edward's calling us from Greenville in North Carolina.
Yes, sir. I was just curious. I'm a prior special forces from Desert Eagle, Desert Storm, and we would interview a lot of suspect stuff about the movements of Saddam Hussein. I'm kind of we would take transcripts and transfer them to our supervisors, but we never made tapes. So I'm curious why the CIA would make the fatal mistake of making a videotape of it.
Why record these interrogations in the first place, Mark Mazzetti?
Well, it's interesting. You know, a lot of people express surprise that as a matter of practice, the U.S. government, whether it's the military or the FBI or the CIA, generally doesn't tape. But in this case, you raise a good question. Why did they do it? According to the statement by Director Hayden on Thursday, they did it to document the fact that the CIA operatives were using legal approved techniques to be basically as a backstop, that if a question arose about whether the techniques they used were legal or torture, they could show these tapes. So General Hayden said it was a protective measure, but then he also said that they stopped taping in 2002, at the end of 2002.
And wasn't there an assertion at one point that they were recording to make sure they got all the information that was accurately recorded so they knew everything that the people being interrogated said?
Yeah, and you can see an argument for actually doing the taping. If you have lengthy interrogations of al-Qaeda suspects and they are saying things in Arabic, maybe a dialect of Arabic going back to reviewing the tapes might help to decipher things that don't quite make sense at a time. If you go back months later with more information, you might be able to piece things together. So, I think just as an observer, you could say that there was an argument for making the tapes.
I wonder, Edward, what did you think in terms of the interrogations that you guys were doing? I guess Edward has left us, but we thank him for his call. And let's see if we can go now to, and this is Olin with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call and a very interesting show today.
Thanks.
I work as a reporter myself, and I was interested in kind of the story behind the story. I know you were talking earlier that this is very restricted information, and I was curious, without revealing any of your sources, you know, how difficult was it to come by this story and break it and to continue to follow it? And I can take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks for the call.
It took several weeks, probably a couple months. And as the caller noted, it's not a story that people talk about casually, and it's not something that is very easy to get answers about. But you just say that it was it took a while. I should probably leave it at that.
We know that you're not going to tell us who your sources are, but we know you presented this story to the Central Intelligence Agency for comment in the middle of last week. What was that conversation like?
Well, we put in our story for Friday's paper that we had notified the agency on Wednesday about our intent to publish the story, and had told them that it was planned for another day or so. And then CIA Director Hayden put out a note to employees on Thursday, the day after we had notified the agency. That note then made its way into the press Thursday afternoon. So we pushed ahead with our story to put it on the web Thursday, late Thursday afternoon.
Our guest is Mark Mazzetti, national security correspondent of the New York Times, who broke the story on the destroyed CIA tapes. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And just to figure out now, where does this story go from here?
Well, there's, I think, a lot of different parts here. There's the question of there's a joint Justice Department CIA Inspector General inquiry into this matter to ultimately determine whether there were any criminal acts, whether there need to be any criminal referrals to get to the bottom of this. On Capitol Hill, both the House and Senate Intelligence Committees are separately doing their own investigations into the matter. There's the issue of the 9/11 commissioners. Governor Kaine has said whether they were told they had everything, whether anyone deliberately lied to them. There is a question of whether the 9/11 Commission, what authorities they had as a government investigative body to get this information. And if it turns out that they were given false statements, what does that mean? I think there's a lot of different moving parts. Everyone's trying to get to the bottom of it. But it's not something that will certainly be resolved in the next couple of weeks.
And some are calling, including Joe Biden, the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, and by the way, a candidate for president, calling for a special prosecutor to be appointed here.
That's right. Senator Biden said that yesterday. This chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Jay Rockefeller, sort of balked at that and said, you know, we should handle this within Congress and within the intelligence committees. But it is a question of whether the Justice Department and the CIA IG can investigate this matter independently. And that's what Senator Biden was talking about.
And as you look at this story, this comes at the end of a week in which the CIA started out looking, in a lot of Americans' eyes, pretty good. This was an agency that came out with the conclusion that Iran was no longer involved in a nuclear weapons program, that they'd halted it some years earlier. Looked like good intelligence, looked like intelligence to a lot of people that defied what the White House might have wanted to hear. What is this story coming on the heels of that due to morale at the Central Intelligence Agency?
It's hard to know. The CIA and the intelligence agencies have in many ways taken a beating over the last 5 years. And as you said, the release of the National Intelligence Estimate last Monday did show that by most accounts they were taking their role after the Iraq War quite seriously, and the judgments that they make about key adversaries like Iran, like North Korea, they're not going to do this lightly, and that they've learned their lesson. And that was what they had said for a few days after the NIE was published. The issue then of the tapes is, I mean, it is a separate matter, but it's also it does feed into this question of what the what our agencies do in secret and how they come to their conclusions and how they conduct themselves in this post 9/11 environment. So yeah, quite a week for the American spies last week.
And finally, the identification of the man believed to be responsible for the destruction, a man who, as you say, is leaving the Central Intelligence Agency at the end of a very long career. Doesn't that raise questions as to whether he might be a scapegoat at this point?
That some on Capitol Hill have questioned whether that he is, whether the arrows pointing to Jose Rodriguez are done in part to sort of contain the damage. I mean, there's little question, it seems, that he ordered this, but But the question is also, did he act on authorities? Did he act on legal authorities? Was he given an approval by other agencies? So that's something that is going to check out over the next weeks and months.
Mark Mazzetti, thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you.
Mark Mazzetti, national security correspondent of the New York Times, who reported last week that the Central Intelligence Agency destroyed tapes of interrogations, aggressive interrogations, quote unquote, of two Al-Qaeda suspects. When we come back, we'll talk with a member of the House Intelligence Committee who once recommended that all CIA interrogations be recorded. Rush Holt joins us. We'll also go to the opinion page and the question of whether this a public figure arrested for driving under the influence, beyond the penalties imposed by the criminal justice system, what other penalties ought to be imposed? Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We've been talking about the recording and subsequent destruction of hours of videotape of two interrogations of Al-Qaeda suspects, recordings made in 2002, destroyed in 2005, and the implications of all of that. Democratic Congressman Rush Holt, who represents New Jersey's 12th District, sits on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. In 2005, he introduced a bill to require the videotaping of all interrogations. That legislation died in committee. You can read the exact wording of the proposal on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Congressman Holt joins us now by phone from New Jersey, and it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Neil, it's good to be with you.
And in retrospect, your idea was prescient.
Well, you know how this came about. We were having a hearing. It was actually a secret hearing, but I can discuss it in general terms. And we were talking about interviewing detainees, and it came up that there were some problems with languages and with dialects. And I said, well, you have the tapes to review, at least, with somebody who knows the dialect better, so you can get the most out of the interrogation. And they said, what tapes? So it became apparent that this was before Abu Ghraib. And then when Abu Ghraib, you know, hit the news, and it became apparent that there was a need for a record for all sorts of reasons, I introduced this legislation that would require videotaping of all interactions with detainees for the benefit of everyone involved, for the interrogators, for the detainees, for those who want to get the maximum intelligence out of the interviews. It makes sense.
And yet it was an idea that fell on stony ground.
It did. A few, you know, some civil libertarians said, well, under the Geneva Conventions, you can't photograph prisoners. Well, what Geneva Convention says is you can't photograph them for the sake of humiliating them or manipulating them or otherwise
using them for propaganda.
Using propaganda, but you certainly could videotape them for the sake of records. Hmm. And those records could be kept with the same level of classification as your interview notes, for example. You know, years ago, as cameras started appearing in cop cars, a lot of police said, "What's the matter? Don't you trust us?" And many police departments fought that really hard. And nowadays, police understand it's their best friend, and a lot of prosecutors and DAs around the country in all 50 states are now routinely taping interviews.
And given what we've learned in the last several days about these two particular tapes, I wonder what questions do you have when this subject comes back up before the House Intelligence Committee?
Well, the biggest question I have is, why do we have to look to the New York Times to bring this out? I mean, you were talking with Mark Mazzetti. Did a fine job, good reporting job. I think the Times once again did a service. But again and again over the few years that I've been on the Intelligence Committee, I've learned more from the press, from you and the print press, than from well, maybe it's an exaggeration to say more than in our hearings, but sometimes I think it is more than I get and then we get, my colleagues and I on the intelligence committees, get from the agencies. It really is hard, and we, I think, still have not held the agencies, taken them to task, held them truly accountable. And so the first question is, you know, why do we again and again have to take a story that appeared in the press and come back to you and say, you know, why did you not answer? And then, you know, they'll say, well, you didn't ask us. And we play a game of 20 questions with the intelligence agencies. You know, if you ask it exactly right, they may tell you. But otherwise, they're very happy to be able to operate independently and, well, and often with impunity.
You mentioned Abu Ghraib. Some suspect that one of the reasons for this material to be destroyed was fear that it would come out and be yet another embarrassment for the United States in general and the CIA in particular.
Well, I think it's pretty clear to everyone that these tapes, however many there were and however many detainees were being videotaped, that they weren't destroyed because the CIA has run out of storage space and their contract was up for their self-storage garage. No, they could keep these tapes. There's plenty of room to keep them if they wanted to keep them. There's some reason they destroyed them. And, you know, this was not just routine office cleanup. Yeah. So you have to ask, you know, what's behind this?
We look forward to your questions. Congressman Holt, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks a lot, Neil. Good to be with you.
Democrat Rush Holt of New Jersey, a member of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. He joined us by phone from New Jersey. And coming up, the opinion page.